I first came to New York in 1983 when there was fear and panic and uncertainty about what was going on in the gay community. All we knew was that people were getting infected and people were dying in large numbers. Along came HIV, and soon after that, we had this atmosphere of discrimination, stigma that developed around HIV, and that led to the identification of certain groups within society who were particularly marginalized. They were heroin users, hookers, homos, and Haitians. So people used to talk about the four H's as the most affected group when it came to HIV. Well, my experience now, 30 years later, is that we can add the next letter of the alphabet to that litany of four, and that is Indigenous people. And what we know now from the evidence is that Indigenous people have been disproportionately affected by HIV.
Why is that?
Well, when it comes to healthcare, Indigenous people throughout the world are disproportionately affected by a number of factors, which include poor access to services, low levels of education, low levels of employment, remote dislocation, inappropriate health services. There's a whole panoply of factors that really affect people's health, and Indigenous people suffer from most of those. So we like to describe those as the social determinants of health. And unfortunately, in most countries around the world, Indigenous people have poorer health outcomes. That is replicated within the whole arena of HIV, and we're now seeing disproportionate rates of HIV, which are in general caused by many of the same social determinants that affect overall health of Indigenous populations.
So what can be done to reverse this trend?
I think one of the great things about coming to a meeting like this is that it does remind us that there is an international effort to bring about some difference and bring about some positive change. If the international community is aware of the particular issues facing Indigenous people with regard to HIV, then I hope that we can be optimistic and look forward to a positive change at the international level, so that organisations such as this can put pressure on our national governments to devote time, energy, resources to preventing the ongoing transmission of HIV. And when we know that younger people, in particular within Indigenous communities, are at greater risk of HIV than non-Indigenous people, then in my eyes, that would be a very useful use of taxpayers' money. Reducing the transmission of HIV among young people in particular will reap significant benefits in the long term, because then we won't have to spend huge amounts of money on expensive treatments for people who do become infected with HIV.
You've been working on this issue for many years. Have you seen any positive change?
I've been working in the area of HIV now for over 30 years, and I also have a very close personal involvement in the epidemic and its effects. I've lost many friends to HIV. There are many members of our Maori community in New Zealand who have passed away as a result of HIV, and that's the same for Indigenous communities around the world. We can identify and number many of our families, many of our friends who have died of HIV. In the early days of the epidemic, very little was done in terms of addressing HIV among Indigenous populations. But yes, I can see a difference now. I think finally we're starting to recognise that there have been disproportionate effects within Indigenous communities. Hopefully we'll be able to address some of those anomalies, and hopefully we'll be able to reduce some of those disparities over time.